I hear the murmur of a million voices blur into gentle prayer. The rumble of a thousand footsteps bustling around me as I retrace the steps taken by a woman thousands of years ago. I am in Mecca, walking between two hills as part of the Islamic rituals. Each step I take, I think of her, Hagar, Abraham's wife. I'm surrounded by waves of people, but Hagar and her baby, Ishmael, were entirely alone in the arid desert, as she rushed between the hills seven times, desperately searching for water. Then a miracle rose up amid her tribulation. The spring of Zamzam gushed forth its sweet waters at her child's feet. The American Muslim poet Morja Kaf captures the scene in her poem, Lifting the Hajar Heel.
Dying for water, Hajar went racing back and forth in the valley, when what she needed most was under the heel of her foot. All it took was an angel's nudge. Little self, panting in the world, take a hint, lift your heel. Find your own long-buried Zamzam spring.
I, alongside millions of others, honour this mother's footsteps. Her moment of need gave us a timeless ritual that forms an essential part of the Islamic pilgrimage, and revealed a source of water that has quenched the thirst of pilgrims for thousands of years. We need and embrace our weaknesses. It is through them that we explore and evolve through the vast spectrum of the human paradigm. Without weakness, there is no room for resilience to rise or character to forge. We grow, reconcile, and carve out our very essence, and uncover our own unique miracles. Through our vulnerability, weakness becomes the mother of power. But like humanity itself, it's a complex story. The paradox of the power of weakness can lead us to downfall when desire, ego, and anger prevent us from climbing to a higher version of ourselves. It's as much our story now as it was of our great ancient past. Sing, goddess of the anger of Achilles, begins the epic Greek poem, the Iliad. I read Homer's words over and over as a teenager, and the scene that gives me goosebumps every time is the meeting between the Greek hero Achilles and the Trojan king Priam, father to his bitterest enemy, Hector. Achilles kills Hector in revenge for his cousin and drags his body around the walls of Troy, his anger raging like a fire. But Priam walks into the enemy camp, kneels at Achilles' feet, and kisses the hands that killed and mutilated his beloved son. Priam humbles himself into a position of weakness, begging for mercy. It is the only power he has to subdue Achilles' fury.
The men did not see great Priam as he entered. He came up to Achilles, then with his fingers clasped his knees and kissed his hands. Those dreadful hands, man-killers which had slain so many of his sons. Godlike Achilles, remember your own father, who's as old as me, on the painful threshold of old age. So Achilles, show deference to the gods and pity for myself, remembering your own father. Of the two old men, I'm more pitiful, because I have endured what no living mortal on this earth has borne. I've lifted up to my own lips and kissed the hands of the man who killed my son. Priam finished. His words roused in Achilles a desire to weep for his own father. Taking Priam's hand, he gently moved him back. So the two men there both remembered warriors who'd been slaughtered. Priam, lying at Achilles' feet, wept aloud for man-killing Hector, and Achilles also wept for his own father and once more for Patroclus. The sound of their lamenting filled the house.
There is a power, a healing in their shared grief, and for a moment their loss unites them in a bittersweet alliance. Achilles' pity for Priam is his real Achilles' heel, a weakness that also gives him strength of character. For me, this is where Achilles becomes the true hero. Not out on the battlefield where he was blinded by rage, but here when compassion gives colour to his humanity. Blindness and colour are themes that play into the story of Gertrude, as told by the French writer André Gide. Poor, blind and naive, Gertrude is adopted by a Christian pastor, Jean Martins, who uses her ignorance as a powerful tool to paint the world as only pure and idyllic. Gide was inspired by Beethoven's Sixth Symphony when he wrote his novella La Symphonie Pastorale. At a concert, the pastor likens the range of colours to the various instruments in a kaleidoscopic symphony of sound.
I bade Gertrude observe the different resonances of the brasses, the strings, and the wood instruments, and that each of them was able in its own way to produce the whole series of sounds, from the lowest to the highest, with varying intensity. I asked her to imagine the colours of nature in the same way. The reds and oranges, analogous to the sounds of the horns and the trombones. The yellows and greens, like those of the violins, cellos, and double basses. The violets and blues, suggested by the clarinets and oboes. A sort of inner rapture now took the place of all her doubts and uncertainties. How beautiful it must be, she kept on repeating.
As Gertrude's power of perception grows from a place of weakness and naivety, so too does her hold over him. But the interplay of power is ultimately destructive and ends in tragedy when the pastor's attempt to shield Gertrude from sin ends in her being the object of his. It leads to Gertrude's death and to the pastor's loss of faith. Such is the paradox of the power of weakness. Professor of Psychology George Kunz observes,
logically, in physical and natural terms, power cannot be weak and weakness cannot be powerful. But nearly everyone recognises the ambiguous use of those terms in social interaction. The bullies are weak and the victims powerful in attracting our compassion. The tyrant's abuse is weaker than the innocent's vulnerability. The bully, powerful in dominating others, is ethically weak, and the innocent, weak in natural force, is ethically powerful. We find the paradox of the power of weakness expressed deeply and widely in history. For example, by the ancient Jewish proverb, "Others' physical needs are my spiritual needs." And by the modern poet, Toni Morrison, "The function of freedom is to free someone else."
These observations articulate to me how power is weak when it is ego-centred. My mind turns to the everyday heroes immortalised within the plaques that hang beneath a simple awning in Postman's Park in London. In 1900, this park became home to the Memorial to Heroic Self-Sacrifice. It pays tribute to the ordinary people who died while saving the lives of others. I feel the warm caress of the afternoon sun, yet the birdsong seems bittersweet as I stand reading the small plaques honouring their sacrifices.
April 24th, 1885. Alice Ayres, daughter of a bricklayer's labourer, saved three children from a burning house at the cost of her own young life.
June 20th, 1888. Elizabeth Boxall, aged 17, died of injuries trying to save a child from a runaway horse.
September 12th, 1886. David Selves, aged 12, supported his drowning playfellow and sank with him clasped in his arms.
Their stories both haunt and inspire me. The victims, vulnerable as they were, had the power to transform the anonymous ordinary souls in society into extraordinary, timeless heroes. The weak have the power to inspire acts of greatness, and they can come from the smallest of creatures. There's a story that I often remind myself of when hope begins to shrink, one that lifts me out of moments of passivity. A South American tale recaptured in Flight of the Hummingbird.
The terrible fire raged and burned. All of the animals were afraid and fled from their homes. The elephant and the tiger, the beaver and the bear all ran, and above them the birds flew in a panic. "My wings will burn. My beak is too small," cried the owl. But the little hummingbird, Duck Duck Dear, persisted. She flew to and fro, picking up more water and dropping it, bead by bead, onto the burning forest. Finally, the big bear said, "Little Duck Duck Dear, what are you doing?" Without stopping, Duck Duck Dear looked down at all of the animals. She said, "I am doing what I can."
In rising to the mammoth challenge of the raging forest fire, the smallest creature with the tiniest beak becomes greater than the fiercest animals of the forest. The giant resolve of such a small creature makes the hummingbird the perfect symbol of power in weakness. It's a dichotomy I see in my own path as a Muslim. My weakness and strength is embedded in my free will. We are more beloved to God because of that freedom, because we struggle to be better human beings, to be better lovers of the divine. As the 11th century born Muslim thinker Imam al-Ghazali said,
"Desires make slaves out of kings, and patience makes kings out of slaves."
When I bow my head on the ground in prayer, I give myself power in surrendering to the divine. The British Muslim musician Sami Yusuf captured the internal power of submission to the divine essence in his soul-stirring song, The Key.
"Your love is a door I cannot find. The only way out is from deep inside. I'm humbled by the light you take when you cover every colour of the day. I'm bright. And by the night you break, you are the divine eternal ray. You are the end where everything begins. You are the key holding me in. The only key holding me in."
This key that Sami Yusuf sings of makes me understand how my weakness is also the key. I find the strength of the divine through my own human fragility. The late English Anglican priest, John Stott, derived this strength when, after losing his voice following a painful infection, he was due to speak at a Christian mission in Australia. Before he took to the stage, he whispered a request that the following verses from Corinthians, related by Paul the Apostle, be spoken to him.
"And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me.
Stott then croaked his gospel message through the microphone with great difficulty. It was on that night he lost his voice that people told him they had come to Christ. There is an extraordinary divine power that lies in our own vulnerability. It's something the British Christian grime artist Stormzy also captures in his song, Blinded by Your Grace. In an article in The Independent, Ella Jukwe writes that Stormzy's imperfect vocals help beautifully illustrate his vulnerability when he becomes Stormzy the worshipper.
I'm blinded by your grace. Every night, every day. And I was lost, yeah. But ever since you found me, I'm blinded by your grace. Through the darkness you came, and I'll be alright with you by my side. The way that I see it, you're all that I'm needing. Your love never lets me down. Your love never leaves me.
The fragility and power that so beautifully align in Stormzy's voice become a devastating paradox for Samson, the last judge of the ancient Israelites and fierce resister of the oppressive Philistines. Samson's long locks of hair were the secret of his mighty strength, but also the source of his greatest weakness. He revealed the mystery of his power to Delilah, the Philistine woman he fell in love with.
And he told her all his heart, and said unto her, There hath not come a razor upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak, and be like any other man.
Delilah betrays him to his enemies, who cut his hair, blind him, and take him prisoner. They celebrate in the great hall of their temple, humiliating the fallen giant. Samson bemoans his fate in the German composer Handel's oratorio.
Total eclipse, no sun, no moon.
It was here, in the enemy's lair, that Samson used the weakness they exploited. He prayed to God to return his power and tore down the pillars of the great hall, taking down with him all the Philistines who were crushed under Samson's last stand. From the rubble of ruin, Samson's story rises for me like a phoenix from the flames. The mythological firebird has mesmerized ancient cultures across the world, from the legends of Greece and Egypt to the storytellers of China and Arabia. The phoenix was said to live for 500 years, and there could only ever be one of its kind. Towards the end of its life, weighed down with old age, it seeks survival in its own ruins. The mythical bird sacrifices itself for its heir, which rises more powerful from the ashes of its predecessor. The Latin poet Claudian writes of the phoenix in the 4th century.
Now the phoenix's bright eye grows dim, and the pupil becomes palsied by the frost of years, like the moon when she is shrouded in clouds and her horn begins to vanish in the mist. Now his wings, once to cleave the clouds of heaven, can scarce raise them from the earth. Then, realizing that his span of life is at an end, and in preparation for a renewal of his splendor, he builds that pyre which shall be at once his tomb and his cradle. On this he takes his seat, and as he grows weaker, greets the sun with his sweet voice. Offering up prayers and supplications, he begs that those fires will give him renewal of strength.
The path of self-destruction heralded a glorious renewal for the phoenix. But self-destruction for Shakespeare's Othello revealed the final climax in his weakness of character. For all his magnanimity, pomp, and military glory, he is overpowered by his own failings. Because of those weak traits of doubt, suspicion, and even self-denial, he sacrifices both Desdemona and himself. Othello's weaknesses are laid bare in his final speech.
Soft you, a word or two before you go. I have done the state some service, and they know it. No more of that. I pray you, in your letters, when you shall these unlucky deeds relate, speak of me as I am. Nothing extenuate, nor set down aught in malice. Then must you speak of one that loved not wisely, but too well. Of one not easily jealous, but being wrought perplexed in the extreme. Of one whose hand, like the base Indian, threw a pearl away richer than all his tribe. Of one whose subdued eyes, albeit unused to the melting mood, drop tears as fast as the Arabian trees their medicinal gum. Set you down this.
Through this speech, the British poet T.S. Eliot found Othello to be self-absorbed and removed from the reality of himself and his actions. For Eliot, there is no great general, but a weak and pathetic figure. He observed,
I have always felt that I have never read a more terrible exposure of human weakness, of universal human weakness, than the last great speech of Othello.
Othello's last words are a chilling epilogue to his final downfall. But the words spoken out in prayer by Jonah lift him from the darkness of his own wrongdoing. Jonah, known as Eunice in the Quran, is impatient with the people of Nineveh. He abandons God's mission and hastily departs on a ship. A wild tempest rages and a great fish cleaves through the waves and swallows him whole. Surrounded by three veils of darkness, in the belly of the whale, in the depth of the sea, in the deep folds of night, Eunice lies in both a watery grave and a protective womb. The Quran relates Jonah's story.
And remember the companion of the fish, when he departed in wrath. He imagined that we had no power over him. But he cried through the depths of darkness, There is no God but thou. Glory to thee. I was indeed wrong. So we listened to him and delivered him from distress. And thus do we deliver those who have faith.
It was in this state of total vulnerability that Jonah provided Muslims with a powerful supplication. It's a supplication I make whenever I am in distress, to lift myself out of the darkness, just as he was delivered back to the world, with higher resilience and strengthened purpose. If we remove weakness from our experience, we remove the opportunity to survive and evolve. This was the finding of Dr. Michael Anthony Corrie, who studied the philosophical relationship between science and religion. In his book, Back to Darwin, The Scientific Case for Deistic Evolution, he observes,
"Suffering is the most potent motivating factor of all in human life. The prospect of suffering seems to be implicit in the very process of self-directed growth from humble beginnings. Immaturity implies the lack of full character assembly, subjectively unpleasant in and of itself, insofar as it represents a critical diminution of our own innermost being. This unpleasantness, in turn, has the power to motivate us on to heighty and higher levels of development through a process of negative reinforcement. The more we grow, the more pain and suffering that is removed from our innermost lives. Necessity is not only the mother of inventions, it is also the mother of character growth as well, as people typically grow only when they have to."
Our weaknesses are the scars we bear in our human evolution. I see how the bleakest moments that Jonah experienced can develop a robustness of faith. How the path of humility, as Priam took at the feet of Achilles, can turn rage into compassion, and how the weakest of us, like the tiny hummingbird, has the power to transform our attitudes and ultimately our society.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind.
Even when we see no light ahead of us, we climb through our weakness, make our way through the darkness, and ready ourselves for the rising.
Come on.